Hey, hi, hello, how's it going? How are you doing? How's your 2020 going? It's been a years, is all I'll say. We're in part three of this very, very long year that kind of keeps going. So what have we been doing to get through this summer? I don't know if it's just me, man, but this summer, this 90 days, this particular season seems like it's just been going and won't stop. I don't know if that's just because of, you know, whatever personal stuff I've got going on or what's happening in the world. If you haven't been paying attention, we are simultaneously in between a sizable population of Americans who are losing their rights to bodily autonomy. There are countries right now that are legitimately on fire, and everything's expensive and doesn't really show any signs of getting any cheaper. So I don't know how you feel about all those things, but we got to get through those somehow. The other day we went to we went out to the concert, watched some music. We got to watch Gustavo Dudamel conduct the Paris National Orchestra or whatever, and I was not aware of this, but there was ballet incorporated, and I'll recommend this thing. If you ever find yourself making enough money to warrant laundering, do it through the arts. Okay, that's how you want to clean your money, right? After you're done with whatever nefarious deeds you conduct and reap the profits of, you should seriously consider investing it into dancers and musicians, because that's where that money should be going. The stuff that these guys and girls do on that stage, man, it's just, I was never much of a dancer. I danced in high school in like a little hip hop group, and other like high school after school activities and stuff like that. But music was primarily my main thing. It's always, it was kind of my first love, and I think it was because when I was growing up, you have parents and stuff that kind of tell you what you're good at. You play baseball or whatever, your dad wanted you to do that. So you're not playing because you love it. You're playing because, they told you, pick a sport. Is it going to be soccer or baseball or basketball or what? Two of those I sucked at. So I stuck with the one where you swing a stick at a ball. And I think that, you get told what you're good at, and I spent a while trying to kind of come to terms with that. And I think music was the one thing that I always told myself that I was good at. That was the one thing where I was like, yeah, I'm good at this. This is going to be my thing. But we got to see that. That was a pretty good night. Got to celebrate, be outside, listen to music written by dead guys who are no longer with us, but it was fun. We got to realize why Americans are kind of resistant to ballet, right? It kind of represents everything that Americans don't like. You have to get told what to do. It's hard work, and it's aesthetically pleasing, right? So we're not really into ballet. This isn't really a ballet country, even though we do patronize it here. Also, to kind of get by, I've been trying to delve back into my old interests. Things like poetry, things like music, as aforementioned. I've been trying to go to more open mics, in the LA area. At least one per week, that's my goal. I don't necessarily like being in bars and stuff like that, which is another thing I gotta get over, but, I gotta pick one or the other. I either get to watch these musicians go out on stage and, kind of lay it all out there for a group of 5 to 10 people, many of whom are heavily intoxicated, or I, stay home. So I usually choose to go out and do the latter, the former, sorry. I've been trying to do that. I've been going to more like writer's workshops for poetry and stuff. And that's been kind of getting me back into like the more positive mindset of watching these people go up and just like, if you've never watched people perform things at the amateur level, you're missing out. Go find these events where people are really, really, really trying to get over you know, and you've and you'll probably discover something, you know, pretty amazing. I've been attending this one particular workshop that's been kind of integral to the Black community since the early 90s, right? The Anansi Writers Workshop. I think it started in Watts, and it's made its home in my neighborhood. And I think one of the most amazing things that I've watched was you go there, and like obviously it's people workshopping poetry and trying to, you know, they're working stuff out, but it really does feel more like a church kind of setting. You know, we're not really talking about poetry, but it becomes really more about people really discussing themselves intimately and feeling like they're part of a community and part of a family, which makes the whole experience easier. I don't know if you've ever tried to read anything out loud in front of anybody, but when you feel like those people are really there for you and care for you, it's a whole different thing. But just listening to these people's stories about how, you know, learning how to write poems, you know, literally transforming their lives. You know, people go up there and say, you know, my house burned down 2 years ago, and you know, someone recommends writing poetry to kind of heal, and you never really think about that, and then, you know, they say that it kind of keeps them balanced, and that's what it's all about, man. I think back in the day, we used to talk about, you know, for wellness, you have these four pillars of resilience: social, spiritual, physical, and mental. Right? Most people have two of the four, right? And usually the other two are out of whack, right? Some people are really physically healthy and maybe mentally, but their social and spiritual needs some like serious work. I'm working on the spiritual one. The mental one, it's a lost cause, man. We're not gonna win that battle, so you know, why even try? We're just gonna stick with the trying to get back to feeling like you're you again part of it, and that's my current goal. Physically, I think I'm good. Rolled my ankle yesterday. Don't know how I did it. I'm at that age now, you know. I think like once you get past age like 29, you just start getting weird injuries that you don't remember getting. You just wake up tomorrow and they hurt. For today's show, though, I'm starting a little series here, right? Women are important, I think. Everyone knows one. Everyone's seen one on TV. I think we all know women. Kind of a dire time, right? I do not possess the proper perspective on what women go through on a daily basis or in their lifetimes. And so I am opening up the next couple episodes. We've got a few planned where we're going to get some women perspectives on some things and help me try to figure some stuff out. Namely, in how men are supposed to talk to other men about problems that women go through, because ultimately, at the end of the day, I think that a lot of the problems with the world that men cause, which is 99% of them, ultimately men have to be responsible for fixing. So that's what we're gonna do today. We're starting with a good friend of mine, Lauren Lawn. She's an academic, as we all are. Literally works in higher education. You know, good person to know. Everyone needs one of them in their lives. For today, I mean, it was just a pretty simple discussion. We brought up some Paulo Freire. If you've never read Paulo Freire, I suggest you do so. Go pick up The Pedagogy of the Oppressed. You can get it for free online. I won't tell you the pirate websites. I do not want to get sued, but just look for it. Give it a read. Even if you just have to go to WikiQuote and do some cherry picking for the quotes, it's good stuff. I don't want to get too deep off in the weeds about liberation philosophy and stuff like that, but you should give it some reading. All right, so without further ado, here is my part one discussion with Lauren Lawn. I've had some stuff on my mind. I've had some things to think about. We all had time to process this current year of 2020 that we're still in.
I don't know. Shit keeps going on and on and on. So
it does seem like every week there's a new calamity.
Something new and exciting to ponder.
Yeah, right. It makes the world worth talking about, I guess, if you look at it.
Add to the cacophony of noise.
I mean, I was gonna do this episode a little while ago, and I wanted to sit on it for a minute because I didn't want to jump into the whole, like, you know, the knee jerk of the 2 weeks after the Roe v. Wade, just the Dobbs decision. Mm-hmm. But I did think that, you know, I don't really have that much to say, funny enough. And like, but what I mean is, like, I don't think that I should be the one talking.
Sure.
You know, and I had a friend of mine who asked, kind of recently, like you know, I guess coming up on a month now. He was like, "How do we talk about this to people who like how do dudes talk about women to other guys, right? Like going, sure. like going forward, you know what I mean?" And it just goes like, when things like this happen, right? Your girlfriend, wife, sister, cousin, neighbor, whoever, has their bodily autonomy like stripped away.
Yeah.
Essentially. Or, I mean, like, not all of your bodily autonomy, but a significant majority of it, right? Like we're not back in chains yet, but but like,
well, sure. Well, the point more so is not necessarily what they're taking away, it's that they are taking it away. It's that it is being taken away in some form or fashion. That's kind of my problem. It's not necessarily, obviously the what is really traumatizing and important, but it's just the fact that it's a conversation that's not happening among women and women in the United States. That's, for me, the bigger issue is, you know, what gives you the right.
So in my, like, in my thought, I would think that, I think that, like, women's bodily autonomy is something that needs to be solved by men, right? It's, like, because if we look at it as, like, the allegory of, like, slavery, it's, like, the people who have to solve the problem of slavery are, like, the slaveholders. And I don't think that the solution to this is, like, you know, there's some clever distractions that we throw at ourselves to where we're like, well, the solution is just put more women in Congress. And I'm like, I don't exactly think that that's, like, the... Like, that's a great world to mm-hmm. to like to strive for, but like, we have women in Congress. Like,
yes,
we have women on the Supreme Court, and
they're not quite doing it. Yep.
Because the question is, like, what types of women are you putting on it? Because I think you and I have discussed this before. It's just like, there's a lot of women in the United States who don't subscribe to this feminist shit.
No.
Like, they just don't sign up to it. They don't sign up to it. They have you know, their goals are proximity to power or whatever, yeah. So they're willing to trade autonomy for safety and material.
Sure.
You know, just basic feminism. You know, like, there's a significant majority of women who are completely willing to trade freedom for, you know, material. And and that's what brings me to this today, is like, I don't know how to talk about that type of stuff with my male friends, right? So if I believe that, like, okay. You know, hey, like, 15 years from now, it's going to be men who have to, like, reverse this course,
mm-hmm.
right?
Oh, man.
Like, I don't know how to, like, talk to them about that.
Sure. I mean, just the fact that you're asking that question and you're aware that there is work you have to do as a man, applaud. Like, hardcore applaud. I don't know if you picked that up on the mic, but applaud. Because this is a conversation that everyone should be having, but in different capacities, right? We all have different roles and different jobs as it pertains to us. Like, as these issues impact us, whether we're further or closer to the center of the debate, that's kind of what's going to define our role. At least I'll add the overall disclaimer. This is from my perspective, and everything I'm saying is, I am no way imposing or assuming that my perspective is the absolute truth. So don't at me. But to back it up, philosophically and academically, I always go back to Paulo Freire's Pedagogy of the Oppressed, which is the root of my radical practices, the root of my beliefs as an academic and as a practitioner and as a member of society, which is there is a hierarchy in society, a tiered system of privilege, of power, and those who sit toward the bottom have less. They are the oppressed. And those who sit toward the top, whether they are aware of it, actively engaging in it, or not, they have power and they are the oppressors. And that's, again, not to say that they are actively, always, they're always actively and aware of their oppressive power, but they still have it and it's still being exercised in some ways, shape, or form, whether it's just by virtue of their ignorance, like these systems just keep on rolling and the status quo is maintained and they are unaware of it because it privileges them, or they want to stay out of it because it's not their bag, it's not their fight, it's not their drama. But the system still is still running, it's still going. And another one of Freire's tenets in this system is the oppressors cannot save the oppressed. They cannot. It's not that they should not, it's that they can't. It's not going to work. Saviorism in any form is not going to be successful. It has to be the oppressed peoples themselves who redefine and redistribute their power. And that is also, I'm kind of moving through this theory, summarizing it, but also moving rapidly through it. It is also not to say that they take the same power that exists in the system itself, in the status quo, because that's also a consequence, or a misfire of the system, is those who are oppressed try to rise above their status, tries to rise out of oppression by oppressing people below them in the same exact ways that they are. So again, maintaining the status quo, which is kind of what's happening when we talk about white female oppression.
Yeah.
That's what we're seeing.
Yeah, I kind of thought that you were going to get to that.
Yes. It's part of it. It's the wagon train is moving, and that's the direction it's going.
It's a significant piece of, like, I think a majority of the social problems we have today is.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, like, there's two ways of viewing kind of like, it kind of doesn't matter who you read. If you're reading, you know, Paulo Freire, or you know, pretty much anyone else who even touches on, like, liberation theory and repression or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I think that there was this idea that was, like, developed in, you know, some school somewhere, where the idea was like, well, you know, all oppressed people just, like, they just desire to be the slave master, right? Because it's like, when you define things within systems of power, like, you don't understand, like, it's hard to envision a world where, like, that doesn't exist, right? Sure. It's like, it's easier for us to imagine a world like it's easier to imagine the world ending than it is to imagine the world without a hierarchy.
Yes.
So, like, the people are just like, well, like, we can't free the slaves because they'll just kill us. Right.
Yeah.
We can't let women vote because then they'll just buy all of the land and like not marry men anymore and like all this other stuff.
Or we can't put more people of color or women into positions of powers, because then white people will become, because
then it'll just be vengeance.
The marginalized and the ostracized, which, by the way, love that de facto you're admitting that, you know, you see racism and you know it exists structurally and you just don't want to be part of it, but whatever, that's fine, we'll just move past that. But that's classic Freire. Like, that is part of his doctrine, is oppression cannot continue, but it will if we don't transform the system, if the system is not changed completely, and it can only be changed completely by the oppressed. But what I was going to get to with your introduction, your lead-in, is but that's not to say that allyship isn't a real theoretical construct, because it is. And there has to be, the oppressed have to be allies. They have to be true and total partners in this transformative journey. And part of that journey is being the foot in the door, the face of representation for your people who are the oppressors. And not to say anything about you, Jeremy, but you are a man, so you are the oppressor in a position of privilege. And it is your job, if you want to be part of this journey, to educate your fellow man and to get them to think in ways that are transformative and liberatory and constructive and, dare I say, feminist.
Yeah, there's so much working against me, though. Right, like there's so
what
much.
What a man thing to say.
There are so many obstacles to overcome in bringing people onto the ship. Right, if we're talking about like freeing a people, or a subclass of people, like a specific group of people, anything you want to define it as, is like there's so much working against it, and it's like us actively working against ourselves. I mean, like I was talking with a buddy of mine about like. Just like the idea of like the manosphere, you know, like these kind of like alpha male YouTubers and podcasts that like, yeah. And I mean, like they're like, I feel like that stuff works because it's, you know, it's popular. It's easier to get those ideas on. And especially when we start talking about things like, well, like, you know, if you make things simple, if you define it as like, you know, if we just do the bell hooks version of it, well, like, women exist to be desired by men, right? And then, like, we can leave it right there. And, like, we can just, like, oversimplify this world. Then, like, now that's working against my idea of, like, well, yes, but, like, freedom for all peoples is like, an even easier concept to get to.
Yes.
And, like, explaining this to, like, your average guy at the gym is, like, you know, he'll agree. He'll be like, oh, yeah, he's like, I think that women should have, like, rights, but like, you know, not more than I have.
Well, that's the thing, right? Is with the people in positions of power, it's not so far as it's not self-serving any longer.
Exactly.
It's not, as long as it does not unseat my place at the table, which is a concept in critical race theory, interest convergence, where it's part of the theory that, and of course let's you know, talk about the conversation in terms of black and white, because that's where CRT lives. Changes to the structure of society, changes to policy, even changes in attitudes should only go as far for white people as it still benefits them in some way. It can never go further. It can never be a complete overhaul in the system, just a tweaking of the system, as long as it still benefits them. So when I think of a male's opinion, a man's opinion, or an alpha male's opinion, in the conversation on female bodily autonomy, I would think a man would think, well, yeah, but women should have rights to make choices about their bodies, but... And then what comes after the but is kind of the thing is, but I think they should still do this, or I believe that it should only go as far as this. Or other side of the spectrum is, but I want my rights to be heard as well. Or, but men don't get as many rights, and I think we should have more in this arena. And usually it's, you know, a father-mother conversation, or conversation about their role in pregnancy and decisions about pregnancy. So I find that with men, the conversation is usually, yes, but me too, please. Usually more aggressive than that, because I am a woman, and that's how I'm going to present it. But like, yes, but what about me?
Yeah, exactly. Even in like circumstances that don't exactly make sense. right? It's like, if you, because it's like, well, it was like, men who are not capable of pregnancy, right? Mm-hmm. Don't have to worry about specific types of bodily autonomy. There are other ones that we have to worry about, but like, that's just not one that they do. But even in something like this, where it's just like, all right, so women who are capable of pregnancy, or people who are capable of pregnancy, have to worry about bodily autonomy in a very specific way, because they can die because they have not received a specific medical procedure, right?
Sure.
And men can distance themselves from that idea and like believe that it should be, that it shouldn't be so, but like have nothing in their brain that says that there's an action necessary to correct it, right? Because mm-hmm. we can just like go home at the end of the day and be like, oh, well, you know, that sucks. When like in reality, we know that like, you know, 1 in 5 guys has like paid for an abortion, right? Like, or something like that, right? Like, not a real statistic, but we know that it's like significant. Like, you've shelled out for, like, you know, we can put a bunch of guys in a room and be like, yeah, you've paid for something, or like you've taken.
Not to be crude, but men do forget that they have just as much skin in the game as women do. And that's kind of the problem. That's one of the problems, or at least what complicates the issue even more, is men do absolutely have as much right to be part of the conversation, because it still impacts them in many ways. But it's also not their rights being taken away actively. So that's where we have to call on like the allyship dude, because it involves you. Like, this is your kid too, and you are going to have not as many consequences, or not the depth of consequences that a female would have, that the mother of the child would have, but you're going to have some consequences too. And I think it's just, I don't know. That's where it gets a little complicated, because like, I, as a woman, think like, no, you're not. You know, you're not part of the conversation, but you totally are. So, like, come here, but stand over there.
Kinda, yeah. So, like, you're touching on kind of the issue that I think I have, to where it's like, it's like you want to be a good ally, but at the same time, it's like, you know, to move us on to the next question here, it's like, how do we vote our way out of this? And who do I get on board becomes those issues, because it's like, okay, Jeremy, like, you've convinced me. Right, women should have bodily autonomy, and I'm also part of the problem, but also like necessary for the solution. Now, what do I do? And I'm just like, well, the answer is, you become president, right? Yes. Like that's my answer. Is like, you
become a politician.
You and all of your friends become senators, and we codify certain rights into law forever. That's what you do now. Right, you become a single platform like elector, and you get elected to office, and you make these changes.
Or you and all your friends move to red states and unseat red governors, and like just undo this domino effect of chaos that's happening.
Yeah, like real fight, like like, hey, it was like, okay, man. So like, what do I do? Like, okay, so like, I'm worried about my sister and like, you know, these these girls I grew up with, like, what do I do? And I'm like, ah, dude, you just run for governor of Alabama. And you win.
Yeah, exactly.
Solution. There you go.
Go to Ohio. It shouldn't be that hard to take over Ohio. It's Ohio.
It's purple-ish, right? Like, you know, you can swing it. But, I mean, like, because that's kind of, like, the thing you end up bumping up against is that, like, it's like, you know, you start running into, like, institutional power as well as, like, the system that's, one, older than us, and two, much, much bigger and much more complicated and difficult to like navigate.
It's much more broken than we are.
It's much more broken than I am, yes. And like, I hate that that's usually the answer, but that's kind of what I ended up saying to this friend of mine. He was like, well, how do we fix it? And I was like, I don't know, become a Supreme Court justice, I guess. Like, I don't know what else to do. Right. I was like, well, we could talk about more radical solutions, right? Nationalized healthcare.
And see, that we're in another state of transition right now, where we're falling out of love with, and again, we're falling out of love with the system, because it's not working, because we're voting and it's getting overturned. and we're, you know, we're protesting and nothing's happening. We're tweeting and nothing's happening. Literally nothing's happening. I don't know how many times I've had this conversation with friends about everyone is aware that what these problems are. Everyone is aware that inflation is a thing. Wage inequality is a thing. Police brutality is a thing. All these things are things, and we're openly talking about them. It's not even like they're secrets anymore. And it's not like, you know, it's not a misdirection campaign where they're using like a calamity to distract us from the real goings on. It's like, no, everyone's aware of the goings on. We're aware of what's going on. We're talking about it openly, and like, it's a problem. It's a problem. Even the president of the United States is commenting like, oh my God, it's a problem, yet nothing's getting done. And I don't know what happened in your civics class in school, but I was told that if enough people corralled, things would change. I was told that if we went out and vote, things would change. And I really just haven't seen a whole lot of evidence to support that. So I don't know what to do either. Well, I could say, go vote, call your state representatives, your local and your state representatives, to let them know that you're upset, and let them know what's important to you, and get everyone you know to do so. But beyond that, it kind of just seems like whatever the powers that be want are going to make happen. Like, and that's it. You're telling me that the Supreme Court and Congress is not aware that people want access to contraceptives and birth control, that people want bodily autonomy and access to safe and legal abortions, that people want same-sex marriage, that people want an early alert system for school shootings, that the people want, okay, the list goes on.
Yeah,
the list goes on of things that have been shot down or overturned in the last month. You're telling me that these people are not aware of what we want as a society? Like, they're aware. They're just doing it anyway.
Yeah, you're naming like pretty much the biggest things in in America right now, and in some cases like around the world, but that are overwhelmingly popular with like people, right? I things like, you know, safe access to legal abortion is popular. It plays in all 50 states. Things like, you know, healthcare for everyone. Free tuition, right? Those things play in like every state, and then we try to complicate it with like the whole, like, you know, I think the thing that really, really derailed the abortion conversation, the biggest mistake was on the determination of when, right? Because saying like, okay, well, like, we all agree that like we should have legal and safe access to abortion, but the question is like, what week, you know, is the cutoff?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, like, no one's performing them at like 9 months, right? So like, why is that? Like, you know, that actually came up at like debates, like in Ohio, and you know, you're watching these people in Texas who are like, oh, like, women are out here getting abortions at like, you know, in the late third trimester, and I'm like, and was like, we know that these things aren't true. But to like go back to your original point,
not necessarily, because I'll say the other half of that conversation is what's defined by medical necessity. What is a medical necessity? Because that's the other part of the conversation. And I watched a congressional hearing that discussed exactly that. It was a pro-life activist talking about what was a medical emergency. And again, back to the fact that this is a conversation that's happening outside of all women in the United States, the fact of the matter is it sucks. Because we're allowing other people to create and define these terms for us. And maybe I don't believe that. I mean, I'm going to get really deep in the weeds and like expose myself, but I believe that a 10-year-old rape victim, her pregnancy is could be defined as a medical emergency, should be defined as an emergency. That's worthy of an abortion procedure.
I generally like to think that like victims of a crime should
yeah.
you know, warrant whatever service is necessary.
That's not the conversation yeah. that's happening. And that's what's crazy to me is now we've reduced it. We've reduced it so much. Instead, women just had bodily autonomy. And I'm sorry if you hated it, but if I decided that I didn't want to have a child, I should be allowed to decide, I guess, up to a certain point. But now we're not only talking about when life begins, we're talking about what they determine is important to me, what should be important to me, and they determine what I'm going to do with my life and this life growing inside me. And again, to reduce it, it sucks. It sucks to have that these conversations are happening. It's like when your parents are talking about you in front of you when you're a little kid and you're just sitting there like, so am I going to be able to, you know, do the thing, or am I in trouble? Like, you're listening to them argue about something you did and you're like eagerly awaiting the decision on whether or not I'm going to be happy in a couple minutes.
This really is like it's a particular American problem to where like we have this really, really great way of reducing anybody who's capable of valuing something academically or like within the framework of like an acting coalition. Like to zero, mm-hmm. right? Smartest women on the planet, PhD scholars, right? Like doctors, lawyers, people who can like mm-hmm. really, really talk about this in like a nuanced way, zero rights, right?
No,
and it's like one of those. It's just like one of those things where we can just like remove it, right?
Yeah.
We can just they're like, oh, we don't care that you've written numerous like scientific papers on like. This or the fact that you're a woman at all and that your experience
like
is unique
woman.
And that you
yeah,
can
yeah.
like we you know all those things are great but like we will still remove you, it doesn't matter if you're
this
you
is still too much for you
yeah
this is too much for you convert you can't be part of this conversation because you are I don't know a nobody a person you're a politician you have less authority to talk about these things than I do.
Yeah, you're a sitting congresswoman, and you have the same amount. You've lost the same amount of rights as like a 13-year-old girl, right? Mm-hmm. We're all just on even plane now, and that's just like astounding to me. You know,
it is astounding.
It's
astounding to hear these people speak, and you want to jump through the television or jump through your phone and just like, I'd run in there right now. Looking like trash, and I just walk into the middle of Congress and be like, "I object." Hearsay. Strike
you're,
all of that.
You're not. Friends. You're not following Roger's rules of order.
No, I don't know who Roger is.
We'd have to. You'd have to. You can't just speak on the floor. There's turns. There's order that has to be followed. Can't just run into the house and start screaming. Some people.
Yes,
some people tried to do that a while back, and it was a big deal.
That's the level of anger and frustration that exists right now is I would be a mad woman in there because it makes no sense to me when I'm listening to it. It makes absolutely no sense that these conversations are happening. And I think maybe that's why I don't have a lot of advice for you as a man talking to other men. I just want you to make sure that they're not being awful. Just make sure they're not awful. I've accepted a lot and more than I should from the males of my species. On just their kind of laissez-faire attitude about things. Because I don't understand it myself right now. Like, I'm confused. I'm taken aback still. And if I'm aback, they are way aback. So... I don't know what to tell you except like tell them to not be awful, to have empathy, to you know, support their women, and if they're from a state that this is a problem in, then they need to work damn hard to make sure that, you know, everyone has there's a solution for her and for you, you know?
Yeah.
Because holy crap, this is just wild.
Yeah, you're, I don't know, you might be asking a lot. I think it's easier to become governor of Alabama than it is to, like, teach people empathy.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So I think I'll just do that. I think I'll just, like, become a shadow kingmaker where I, like, find a way to put these people in positions of power that aren't me, because it can't be me.
Hi.
No. No. I don't know.
want to be governor of Alabama?
No. No, I don't like Alabama.
No one likes Alabama. Who do you think the governor likes Alabama?
You know what? It is fun to watch, like, some of these states, like, openly hate themselves. It's just great. I think that, like, what's been happening in, like, Ohio and Mississippi and, like, Alabama is just perfect. It's like, it's all they deserve. Like, you know, mm-hmm. to where they're just like, yeah, like, you know, because what was the excuse in Ohio is, you know, the 10-year-old doesn't deserve, she doesn't deserve, she shouldn't have access to illegal and safe abortion because conditions like hers are relatively rare. There's only 57 per year who are, and I'm like, this is a lot
gross,
of
gross, guys.
Yeah.
Gross. Just, that's pretty gross.
You're proud of that statistic. You're like, well, it's only 57 girls in her condition.
It's so low. It's in the double digits still.
Yeah, and rising. The year is not over. They're like 57 this year. So it's like, oh, okay. I'm not going there. But no. But yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that we need to talk to these people, and women need to also talk to men.
Yes.
They need to stop. Stop deferring. I think that we're getting to that point because there's a lot of girls out there. You know them. There's a lot of girls out there that defer. They're just like, well, this is the new condition. I guess we'll see what the husband thinks, and then we'll just go with what he says.
Right? Hey, what do you mean?
I think that there's a lot of women who, much like for a lot of things, and I don't even think this. I have friends like this. Like I've talked to them, who don't want any part of the fight. Right, it's like we said at the beginning of this, like, there's some girls who just don't subscribe to, like, feminism. They're just, like, they feel either left out by the movement or they feel truly powerless, right?
Okay.
And they want no part of the fight, so they're just basically deferring their futures to whoever is going to actually do it, right? They don't think about things in concepts of, like, bodily autonomy or whatever, because there's a way to look at this is like, well, there are some women who legitimately believe that they are just not going to get pregnant, and this does not affect them, you know. And I've talked to some of them too, and I'm going to have one on the show. And
do you just magically not get pregnant? Are they abstinent?
Who knows, man. But we gotta get
way in their business.
We gotta get perspectives from all sides, you know.
Like, so either you are abstinent, which, kudos to you, good for you, I guess, or you're on birth control, some other form of contraceptive, which is now on the chopping block again, so yeah, like...
There are whole states saying that birth control is murder right now. There's straight up politicians running on a platform of like...
I love the jokes, but they're totally valid. Like, well, I believe that life begins at ejaculation. I believe that life begins. So masturbating is murder, gentlemen. Like,
yes.
Honestly, though, if there could be some consequence for guys, I don't wish.
No,
that
it doesn't.
On you
it doesn't.
Guys.
It doesn't apply to men. It doesn't apply to men.
I don't wish that on you guys, but I want. There needs to be like, I'm doing the thing where I'm jealous that you guys have no suffering. You're not suffering at all. Like, so I want you to suffer just a little bit. So, like, if we could go ahead and make masturbating and ejaculating illegal, I would. Lol. I'd be like, ha! Suck it.
I mean, sodomy laws are coming back, so we're not. That's only a hop, skip, and a jump. That's not a, you know. I guarantee you that there is some. He's 78 years old. And he's been planning on running for Congress, and that's the type that would work in like an Idaho, right? Mm-hmm. And that's his entire platform is sodomy, premarital sex, and masturbation are like his entire platform is those three things. Trying to put bills on the books that stop all forms of wasted potential life, right? If we're gonna use a philosophical term. we're denying these future goods, so he's just going, he goes straight towards it, right? And then he runs for office and he, like, dies, like, 2 weeks later from a heart attack or something.
Geez.
But we're not that far off, dude. I'm not putting anything past us.
I would say there are dinosaurs right now on our both Supreme Court and in Congress that probably subscribe to that 100%, but just know better than to come right out with it. They're getting a little bit better, like they're getting a little braver, and they're like, yeah, I'm actually against these things. I've totally been the whole time. Now that the movement momentum's gaining and intolerance is back in the forefront. But yeah, I bet that is happening. But I forgot what I was saying before I got on the...
You want me to suffer. You want me to feel,
ejaculation
you want me to
is
feel
murder.
Pain. Yeah, you want
Hashtag
me to
ejaculation is murder.
Yeah, you're like a year off from like talking about forced vasectomies and stuff like that for like single males and stuff. You're on that train.
It would never do that to you though. That's the thing, is they would never.
Well, that's what we're afraid of. That's why we keep taking your rights away. That's why men keep taking your rights. It's because we're worried that if we have a female president, that's the first thing she's going to do is write in that single men have to get vasectomies. Period.
Well, the male birth control is out and about. That must be what kicked this whole thing off. Maybe that's it.
That probably scared a lot of Joe Rogan listeners.
And maybe that's the root of
it. Probably
of the
scared
problem.
A lot of dudes.
Yeah, it definitely scared.
They have these pharma guys who are talking about like this is like revolutionary, right? A non-invasive method to prevent males from having children that they don't want, and like dudes are like terrified by that idea. They're like, wait, I have to take a thing?
I have to do a thing?
I'm like, dude, we've been trying for nearly a century to get people to just wear condoms. Right? Like these dudes are not they're not doing it.
There's such a knee-jerk reaction to it. Like, you gotta like just we could have just gone slow with it, but
hey, how was that? Was it good? Mad at me? I'm gonna go to the gym, work it off. Feeling kind of radical now. Have we successfully converted you? Have we unsuccessfully converted you? Just want to know how you're feeling. I don't want to get any angry emails or anything like that. I mean, I kind of do. But we need to be having these talks, guys, with all kinds of people. Some of you ladies out there, talk to your man. Talk to him. Have you really sat down with him? Have you had the talk? Do you know where their head's at? Do they feel affected or unaffected? I'm just wondering. We got to be having these talks, guys. That was good. I want to make it better. I want to keep going. Obviously, that was part one. You don't get the whole thing. That's just how it's going to be. You don't get the whole thing. You get one part of it. Because I have to limit the time on these shows. I'm busy. Right? I've got dinners and gym time. I have things to do. So this is just part one. Right. So if you want more, you'll just have to keep listening. In addition, I'm going to try to do these weekly. That's my new half year's resolution. That's my July resolution, is try to get these up week by week and not sit on them for so long. Right. Because I do enjoy having these. I enjoy having these guests on. And I enjoy having these little talks and stuff and putting them up there for you, the listener. So that's what I'm going to try to do. We're going to try to do these on a weekly basis. So don't yell at me if I miss, a Friday or a Monday. I don't respond well to negative reinforcement. So with all that, in order, like I said, I've been getting back into poetry. I was reintroduced to the works of Lucille Clifton by someone that I met at a writing workshop that I attended recently. And the thing about Lucille Clifton is that her poetry is amazing, if you've never read it. Life-changing type of amazing. I was introduced to her, at a pretty young age. And I read everything she's ever written. She passed away not too long ago. But I wanted to leave today with a poem specifically targeted at women out there. Obviously, it's coded. It's written for an African-American audience, particularly black women. But I think we all need someone to read a poem to us, right, these days. Won't you celebrate with me what I have shaped into a kind of life? I had no model. Born in Babylon, both non-white and woman, what did I see to be except myself? I made it up. Here on this bridge between starshine and clay, my one hand holding tight my other hand, come celebrate with me that every day something has tried to kill me and has failed. Deep stuff, man. Read our works. Read a book. Write a thing down. How's your spiritual? Work on your spiritual. Okay? Do all that stuff. I'm out. I'm leaving. I've got stuff to do. We'll be back next-ish week with more of this stuff in this series. Hope you enjoyed it. Stay safe.